Against the backdrop of high electricity prices, clean energy advocates came together in Keene, New Hampshire back in 2013 to try something that hadn't been explored much in their state, community solar. At the time, few states had well-traveled models for integrating such projects. But the Keene group came up with a creative solution. Today, their 43-kilowatt project, sponsored by local investors, sits atop the Monadnock Food Co-op downtown, providing low-cost, clean energy to a local business. Peter Hansel invested in the project and helped navigate complex legal and regulatory issues along the way. He recently spoke with John Farrell, who heads the Energy Democracy Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, about how they made it happen and the benefits for Keene.
The essence of local business, local investment, really paid off because we have a local host, local investors, local installer. It really worked out perfectly from that point of view.
This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
I was hoping you could just give a brief description of the solar array itself.
Sure. Monadnock Food Co-op is a relatively new facility. It's about 4 years old, 5 years old, somewhere in that range, maybe even less than that. So it had a brand new roof, relatively speaking, and they are located right in the center of Keene, right in the middle of our downtown. They have enough room on their roof for us to install a 43-kilowatt array. We put out a bid for a contractor all over New Hampshire and the surrounding states. We got a couple of bids in. Fortunately, one of them was from a local installer right here in Keene that we felt comfortable working with. The essence of local business, local investment really paid off because we have a local host, local investors, local installer. It really worked out perfectly from that point of view.
So, you know, when it comes to community solar, there are really three major issues that ILSR has outlined. It's actually in a report that we published called Beyond Sharing that looks at community renewable energy about a year ago for community renewable energy projects. One of them is capturing federal tax credits, which are not available to non-taxable entities. The second one is, how do you put together the money? How do you raise capital that in a way that complies with securities law? And then the third one is finding a revenue stream to help pay for the project and to reward the members who are part of it. And most successful projects in community solar right now are using what's called the community shared solar model, where people are sort of subscribers. They're not necessarily owners of the project. In fact, they might just be sort of pre-purchasing energy from a solar array that's owned by somebody else. So joining me today is Peter Hansel to talk about a community solar project in New Hampshire that went a little bit differently. So can you tell me a little bit about how you were able to figure out these kind of challenging issues for community solar without using the subscriber model? You know, what kind of structure did you use that allowed people to invest in community solar?
We had to be creative, and I'm not sure one size is going to fit everybody. But what we did was we had a willing host, in this case, the Monadnock Food Co-op. They actually are a for-profit entity, but they do not have a tax appetite for this. So they have already used any credits they could possibly use. They were not able to take advantage of the tax credits, in other words. So we treated them as if they were a non-profit. And in order to make the economics work, we worked with them to come up with some of the investment money. We'll call it investment money. We actually, after working with lawyers and so forth, we actually did a pre-purchase arrangement with them where they provided about 40% of the investment cost through the form of a pre-purchase of power. And the remaining 60% of the investment was raised through the traditional way of finding local investors that were willing to put up some money towards this project. That's how we got around this subscriber, you call it the subscriber method. We couldn't figure out how to do that in New Hampshire anyway. And fortunately, we're able to come up with this other pre-purchase arrangement. The disadvantage of that is that we formed an LLC, and the investors in that LLC had to treat that pre-purchase amount as income. So there was a little bit of a tax hit for that, and we had to work that into our economics, and fortunately was able to make it all work.
With the pre-purchase, did the co-op pay for power at a premium to what it would have paid otherwise? Was it similar? I've seen a lot of different, from the perspective of subscribers, models for how folks will pre-purchase electricity. I'm curious what structure you had for the co-op.
Just to put some numbers to it, let's say, just for rounded off, their power purchase from a local utility is 10 cents a kilowatt hour. On the pre-purchase rate, we charge them 7 cents a kilowatt hour. And in our power purchase agreement with them, we agreed that we would charge only 3 cents per kilowatt hour for power that we generate during each year. So they were not paying any more to this project than they would have paid to their local utility. And the advantage to them is, first of all, it doesn't escalate like a local utility would. And secondly, they would have the option after 6 or 7 years to purchase the solar array themselves back from the LLC and be able to monetize that gain for years to come into the future.
One of the big questions for all these projects is, you know, how do you get that federal tax credit? Was that something you were able to capture with this model?
Yes, we were. The investors, even though they only put up 60% of the total investment, were able to get the full tax credit on the full investment cost of the solar array. So they were getting the federal income tax credit on 100% of the cost. We were able to take advantage of a rebate program that New Hampshire, the state, as, plus we were able to take advantage of the accelerated depreciation on the solar array. We were also able to capture the RECs for the solar project. Now, those are the returns that we're getting directly back to the investors, plus they get, the 3 cents per kilowatt hour from the solar array for every amount of energy that's produced.
Couple questions on the tax credit. I know one of these sort of gets into the weeds, but it's something that I've encountered. Was the tax credit treated differently? I know some folks might be familiar with this term, passive income. For some of these structures, the tax credit can only be applied to income that is earned like on investments and not necessarily against your income taxes, for example, that you're familiar with paying. I'm curious if that was an issue here.
It definitely was. We made it clear to our investors that the income credit can only be applied if you have passive income to write it off against. That affected a few potential investors. They sort of had to pull back or pull out instead of making this investment because of that restriction. It's a problem. It narrows your field for finding local investors, but fortunately there were enough here in Keene and in our region to finance the project.
Do you get a sense from having done this project that there is an appetite for replicating this, you know, even within that region, that you'd be able to find enough investors or maybe some of the participants in this project would want to do another one, or that this is replicable in other places around the country?
We're hopeful that other projects will grow out of this or try to replicate it. The Monadnock Sustainability Network, which is kind of an organization that oversaw this whole project, has put together a guide for other interested people that are interested organizations that are trying to do this. We went through a lot of the groundwork. Most of that time was legal issues. We never realized how complicated legally this can be. But now that we've done that work, you know, we've developed templates for setting up an LLC, for, you know, going out for bid, for instance, the paperwork that you need for going out for bid and for evaluating contractors in the process. All that paperwork has been done, sample PPAs for agreements with the host facility, that's all done. So other organizations aren't going to have to do that part again. They're still going to have to find investors that are interested. They're still going to have to find a champion person that's willing to do some of the organizing. And, you know, in our case, it was a few of us in our steering committee that kind of took this on and spent our time doing it. There is a little bit of busy work, paperwork and bookkeeping that needs to be done. I'm taking on most of that role in this project. Somebody's going to have to be willing to do some of that work. I think all of us that invested in this project are not doing it necessarily for the return we're going to get. We do want to get our return and maybe some profit back from the money we've invested. But most of us are doing it because we believe in this kind of a project and are willing to put in the time that's necessary to see it succeed.
Hey, thanks for listening to Local Energy Rules. If you've made it this far, you're obviously a fan, and we could use your help for just 2 minutes. Wherever you found our podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, or somewhere else, help other folks find us too by rating our podcast. You should also check out ILSR's other podcasts, like Building Local Power or Community Broadband Bits. Thanks so much for listening.
Peter, I'm curious, you know, you mentioned this steering committee. Was it formed just for the purposes of pursuing this project, or is this steering committee doing other environmental or energy-related work?
The steering committee actually was formed to try to find a model, and we have a branch of Antioch University. Antioch University in New England is right here in Keene, and some of their graduate students were part of our steering committee as their project for their schoolwork. They provided a lot of great help to us in studying other models around the country and synthesizing what various models we could look at. We looked at maybe 3 or 4 that made sense here in New Hampshire and sort of fine-tuned it down to what we ended up with, which was kind of new for New Hampshire. I don't think anybody has tried this type of approach before. You know, we're breaking a little bit of ground here. It may not be new for other places around the country. New Hampshire has its own quirks to deal with and not a lot of incentives, but we made use of the incentives that are there and have something that'll work in our state.
You know, when you said you were looking at other models, just a couple questions there. One is, was there another place that had tried this particular model before, or have you pioneered that? And then the second question would just be, what was, you know, maybe a characteristic of one of the other models that didn't seem workable?
The one that we looked at most was a co-op version, similar to what was done in Vermont with the Brattleboro co-op, and sort of grew out of that. I'm not sure their model was completely ended up as a co-op version, but we got some people from that organization to come over and tell us what was involved there. That, first of all, didn't really translate as much to New Hampshire as we would hope, and it had other criteria that they were looking at to get more people involved, and we felt that their model just didn't really work for what we were trying to accomplish here. And we looked at other models as well, but that, you know, we sort of used parts of theirs and fashioned our own out of that.
So what's the return like for investors? Do you have like a payback period, or, you know, is it just sort of a steady return over time? I think you mentioned that the cash flow for an investor is this power purchase agreement and then the renewable energy credits. Is there anything else that they'll be getting over time?
The biggest selling point, I think, for the investors was that you get a good portion of your investment back fairly quickly. With the income tax credit, the federal credits, those come back the first year after the project's been put online. You also get the New Hampshire rebate back right away. And so if you look at your total investment over, you know, 10 years, the return's not great. But if you factor in the fact that you've gotten a good portion of that money back, over 50% of that money back in the first 2 years, you're really only talking about the remainder of your money that's being tied up for that longer period of time. Of course, we haven't even finished our first year yet. So the unit went online in May 25th. So we're coming up to our first year, May 25th of 2016. I've been monitoring how we're doing. The power we've produced is almost what we predicted, not quite. But I think a lot of this is going to play out over time. And the co-op understands that we as investors do need to make a return. And they understand that. And again, after six or seven years, after all of the credits have come back to us that can come back to us, particularly in terms of the depreciation credits, we can then turn around and sell the project to the food co-op. And that will pretty much nail down the type of return that we're going to get. We have a rough idea what we're going to sell it for. They have a rough idea as well for that figure. We both understand that that may need to be tweaked up or down to make sure that the investors have made the return that they're expecting. That's also an interesting part of this whole project, is that nobody seems to know what the fair market value of a solar array stuck on a roof is. Our lawyers hemmed and hawed over that for a long time and basically said it's almost impossible to tell. There aren't any examples of people saying, well, you know, I'm going to sell that array on the open market and see what I can get. It's not as if it's a freestanding array in the middle of a cornfield. It's on a roof. It's, you know, very intimately connected with the host and the user of that power in the host facility. So coming up with a fair market value for the array after 6 or 7 years is pretty much going to be up to us to determine, us and the food co-op.
That's so interesting. It is funny too, because you have, of course, you're depreciating the value of this against the taxes. So by the end of that term, you've depreciated the whole thing. So in some ways,
yeah,
someone could argue, oh, well, it's not worth anything. You've depreciated the equipment. But of course, it's still producing power and will for two
right.
more decades. So it is a complicated question.
It is.
One logistical question for you back on the policy side of things. About half of states have laws that allow for these third-party power purchase agreements, and then half of them do not, where the utility is the only person who can sign a PPA. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the key rules here in New Hampshire that allowed this project to move forward?
Yes. We've had net metering here in New Hampshire for quite a while, and a few years ago we passed a group net metering. It's not an ideal group net metering law compared to other states, and we didn't happen to need group net metering in this project, but it is there in case other projects might need that. But yes, we have power purchase agreements that can be arranged between friendly parties. It doesn't have to be with a utility.
Well, Peter, before I let you go, is there anything else you think people should know about this project if they're setting out to do community solar?
I think, you know, it's definitely worth doing. From my perspective, the thing that drew my interest to it, aside from the fact that I'm a solar advocate, have solar on my own roof, I have solar on my business's roof, and I think the more we can do with local distributed energy, the better. You also have to be passionate about wanting to keep investments local. And I think that's one of the things that really kept my interest in this project. And again, if anybody is interested in this prototype, they can go to greenmonadnock.org. That's green, MONADNOCK.org. And find out more information on this and how to participate.
Perfect. And we will also make sure that we have a link to that on our website at ilsr.org. Peter, thanks again for talking with me.
All right. Thank you, John.
That was Peter Hansel, who helped spearhead a novel, locally owned community solar project in Keene, New Hampshire, speaking with ILSR's own John Farrell about how the project kept benefits in the community despite challenges along the way. For more information on community energy projects, visit ilsr.org. And while you're there, check out past episodes of the Local Energy Rules podcast. Credit to Texas Music Forge for the audio clip you heard in the middle of this episode. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.